shown.
We have such sights to show you.
Welcome back to the Devil Made Me View It, a horror podcast. I'm Jesse Spitzer.
And I'm J.R. Lees.
And this is our second episode of the month talking about It. And I'm so excited. I feel like this is the movie we're talking about today, the 2017 It remake, is the reason that It is still so, like, in everybody's mind right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of built into this franchise that just keeps giving and keeps hitting, and I'm really excited to talk about it. Dive in.
Yeah, this was a big one. This was a game changer, to be cliche, for an R-rated. It made all the money. It wasn't pandering. It had no stars outside of Stephen King. And it was just it was a great movie.
Yeah, it's just
there.
It's,
we're done. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we recommend it. Let's talk about it next week. yeah, it was kind of crazy. I just rewatched this with my wife. We watched it in theaters when it first came out, and I was just kind of remembering all the feelings I had while watching it the first time. That opening scene with Georgie getting his arm ripped off and then getting dragged into the sewers was oh, this is not going to pull any punches. Like, this is going to be brutal and horrifying and awesome. And then immediately afterwards, you're introduced to the main cast of characters, and they're so funny. Like, they're so effortlessly, you just want to watch them forever. Like, if they were in a comedy, I'd be having just as much of a good time.
If this group remade The Goonies,
exactly, right,
I would have been on board. This is yeah.
I almost kind of wish there was like a modern day Brat Pack that happened out of this, but it didn't really come to fruition. Everyone kind of went their separate ways, but
yeah.
Yeah, what a talented group of actors. Something weird I thought about while watching this, and I don't know if I can say this about. I'm sure there's other horror movies that you could probably say this about, but I don't think there's a single like piece of dialogue that isn't said to a child or like in front of a child in this whole movie. Like, there's no like aside with like two adults the entire time, which is kind of interesting and unique, I think. And I like that they had the confidence to do that. And like, you know, everyone can enjoy this movie, even though every single scene you're in the perspective of a child.
Yeah.
Because the kids sell, their performances are so good. They're written so well. And it's just kind of mind blowing. I don't know. There's a lot of weird decisions that they made with this movie, and I love them all. And it just made a great movie.
Even the ones I didn't like, was it 10 years ago, 11 years ago, 9 years ago? I've watched this again. Yeah. And I've watched it again. I'm like, no, everything is exactly how it should be. I'm guessing it, because it's based on a book, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's conceived to be the whole movie in the book. This would all be flashbacks. You know, it's set in the present day of when it came out. So since it's all flashbacks of the adult characters, it has to be kid on kid. It has to be just the kids talking. There can't be in a scene with the adults. But they could have. There's no reason that they kept to the flashback idea so well that they probably could have had a scene where Bill's parents are talking about something.
Exactly.
Or saying poor little Bill. Bill being the, like, quote unquote, the main character. Mm-hmm. The little kid in the beginning, Georgie, he's our entry character, is Bill, who has the shame of letting his little brother go play out in the rain by himself.
Which I think is unique to this portrayal of the story, is that, like, he was faking his illness.
He was faking being sick. I kind of get that in the book.
Okay.
I don't remember the line or not, but I mean, it's also like, because Georgie's an annoying little brother, which here is a really nice touch. But in the miniseries, no, he's sick. He's coughing.
Yeah,
you know? Right. If he coughs, he has to be sick. Mm-hmm. I think you're right though. This, the casting of this, because we're watching this again just a couple days ago, because you told me to. No, I would have watched it anyway. But it's just, and it was we watched it on HBO, and we're poor, so we have commercial breaks.
Same.
Which normally annoys the crap out of me, but this time it was nice because we've seen it before a couple times. The commercial breaks, my wife and I both go, this is really good.
Yeah.
Oh, that kid's the best thing ever. I mean, Eddie Gasbrack is, like, we're trying to figure out who our hero character is this time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As we're reading the book, it's Bill. I'm not trying to compare it to other stuff too much, sure. But then in the 90s, it's definitely Jonathan Brandis again, Bill. And this one is kind of like when we saw it the first time, oh, it's really Bev's movie. And they kind of, they remember they're talking about having, make it more of a Bev centric story. Watching this last time, it was the whole group. It was back and forth.
Who is your favorite in this adaptation?
Oh, it's weird. Cause I'm a big Richie Tozer fan. Okay. Any version of it, but watch this last time, it's Eddie
100%.
And I don't know if it's because I'm not getting ahead of the game, I'm not saying anything, but Eddie has a lot of Richie from Welcome to Derry, even though it's not
right.
There's a relation there, but that the smartness, the swarminess of it. Also, I'm a big fan of that actor I got right here, Jack Dylan Grazer from the Shazam movies,
yes.
Which when he turns into the heroes, I don't care anymore. But when it's the kids talking, and he is so quick, you know.
Yeah. He's like a mile a minute, like just
100%. And as an asthmatic myself, like watching an inhaler, he only stops talking long enough to take the puff, you know.
Yeah. I love the scene where they're at the mouth of the sewage, and he's just like right, like naming all the reasons they shouldn't be doing this. And
just, when he says gray water, I laugh every time because I'm like, that's I remember that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so good. He's so funny, and I was, as we were watching it, I'm just like, that kid is so talented.
Yeah.
Well,
he's the one that he knows where the camera is. It's like the. I forget, it was a John Travolta story that someone was talking about, how you're doing a scene with John Travolta, he knows where the cameras are, where your camera is, the light, so he's never not doing it right. It's a technical acting. This kid knows the pacing, he knows the next scene's going to be up. I mean, there's jokes about him, like the making of how he's like Bill Skarsgård's in a scene with him face to face the first time, drooling on him because the teeth, and then the kid's freaking out, and then Skarsgård's like, you know, this interview, oh, I'm freaking this Jack out. I'm freaking him out. When I got done, I got to stop this. And so they call cut. They're resting, and then you know the kid just the fear walks away. The tears get dried up. He goes, hey, what are you doing there? That's really good. Okay, do some more. And
yeah,
like, that is such a pro. And we're kind of skipping the obvious MVP here, but Finn Wolfhard.
Oh yeah.
The history of this, you know, it's a great book. It's a miniseries. It tries to get made for a bunch of years. Everyone's been attached to it or talked about it or whatever, and then nothing happens. And then the Duffers make Stranger Things, basically on the heels of this. It's basically a love letter to Carpenter, Spielberg, and King. I'm not in any way crapping. I've just watched the end of the show. So Stranger Things gets built up and it's big and we're waiting for it. And then this comes up and it's almost like Stranger Things was just a promotion for it.
Yeah.
Because Wolfhard is so good in it that I forget he's in Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so funny. And it's weird. A movie about killing kids is laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
I mean, the Richie Wolfhard, so fast, so funny, so believable.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's not telling jokes. This isn't a teenage Brett, Kevin Hart, Dwayne Johnson movie, which would be kind of fun.
Sure. It's not
one-liners. There's never a setup. He drops it in and it's exactly how kids when they're 12, 13, especially in the 80s, talked. Stupid. It's all about their dicks. It's all about your mom's dick.
Yep.
It's all about it's not, none of it's on the page. It would just look like annoying, right? It's like when people complain about too many F-bombs in a script. This is how it was. I mean, as an old man, kids on a bike, it was just different. But also, even if you weren't from there, these kids come off as real.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're a couple years ahead of you, but like you have to look at those and go, I know those kids.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, those kids. And as far as like being losers or not, it's just a tight group. But even it's just the hiding behind insecurities, behind nonstop cursing. The one kid in the group who doesn't talk enough and then kind of at the end says something, that the friendship, this is like if Stand By Me was done again with just the smack, just the back and forth. Oh, why are they friends? Because of this kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I won't. And then the movie cast this well, I dare you to find it. You
know? Yeah, yeah. I think what I like most about Richie is in his performance in this movie is how nobody ever matches his like energy. Like, but he always is like, he'll, you know, how many times in this movie does he raise his hand for a high five and just get completely rejected? Like, I just love that.
Yeah,
he doesn't care. You know, he's not doing it for them. He's doing it for him.
And he actually looks hurt each time. He's surprised that no one thought that was funny but him. You know, it's just so good.
It's fun. It's,
I could watch this on a loop. Now, a decade ago, watching this, I went in, and this is a big one. It was like promoted heavily, and my kid was like, you know, early teens, maybe, you know, he's like 12, 13. Mm-hmm. It was going to be for him. We'd all watch Stranger Things. He was looking forward to it. He'd already seen the miniseries a bunch of times. So I kind of went into it like fresh off of the Tim Curry version. So I kind of went in with the whole, it's not my Pennywise. I'm team Tim Curry. And, you know, I lasted about halfway through.
Yeah.
I still kind of think if you, and I've said it before, if you put Tim Curry in this, it's the perfect movie, but watching it, I'm kind of loving Skarsgård. I could watch this one on a loop because it was, even it just background noise, the music's beautiful. And I remember back then I was kind of down on the CG being like too much, and now I'm like, now I love it the way it was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't because of the kind of cartoon elements of it being like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Exactly. Yeah, it's got its own kind of unique feel to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like you know, like an over, I don't know. Yeah, in another movie it wouldn't work as well, but in this it's just kind of like, yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing how scary this movie is too. And we talk about how brutal it is off the top, but there's like genuinely the scene in the garage with the with the projector, watching it again, like I actually forgot about that scene. Not that like I just wasn't, you know, while I was watching, I was kind of in the movie, and then that scene came up and I was like, oh man, like I feel a little nervous right now because I remember watching this in theaters and being like, this is really intense.
That's what I was thinking when it was, when we're watching again, I remembered when the jump happens, I remembered in that moment in the theater jumping. I don't think I jumped this time, but it's like, oh, this is the scene where I, you know, peed myself as a grown adult. And because it's just one of those things where it's just so prolonged and it's going, and then when it popped, and I know it's a big loud jump scare, but hey, if it scares you,
yeah,
good, you know, it works.
It's such a creative jump scare. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to predict. If you haven't seen the scene before, you're not going to guess that a giant Pennywise is going to crawl out of the wall. It's so absurd. And they do it again in the, obviously we'll wait till next week to talk about it, but they do another thing in the second movie with the giant statue, where it's just like, how did they make something so big like sneak up on you and jump out at you? It's impressive. And then we're talking about Eddie's performance, the whole scene where they're in the Niebolt house the first time, and Pennywise is just messing with them, like sending them through doors and stuff that like not very scary, all that stuff, and it's mind-blowing that it's all happening at once, and it's Eddie's, like, two of my favorite moments in Eddie's performance is him coming out of the bed and then like has like slime coming out of his mouth and he's like seizing, and at the same time, one floor lower, the real Eddie is like being stalked by Pennywise and he's looking terrified. And that's another thing, these kids sell fear so well. Beverly in particular, when she is like screaming, it's like, that is a traumatized child I'm watching freak out right now. And I don't know, there's so much, my brain's like going a million different directions right now because there's so much I love about this movie that I think this movie really reignited my like love for horror in general. I think it did that for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's why, I think this movie can be attributed to why horror kind of had like a renaissance and is still kind of pushed.
Well, especially the Stephen King renaissance. I mean, after this, before this, you'd had like the surprising hits. But then after that, I think he's had stuff in production off of his work since then.
Yeah.
You know, and really, really good stuff since then, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And I like that. I think all it really took was just a little bit of faith in somebody with a vision, or I guess in this case, it's two people, right? It's a brother and sister.
Yeah. Well, it started off, there's a script from, I'm going to say his name wrong, Cary Fukunaga. Who did like True Detective and a lot of big things. You know, he's really, really good. So it was his script originally. I think he had cast Will Powder.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, he's perfect because he looks like Tim Curry. He has the same kind of face. And I was a big fan of like somebody like We're the Millers. So I thought he was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then for whatever reason, Fukunaga was gone. It might have been like a scheduling thing. It might have been another thing. Then they brought in Muschietti's. And then people kind of like, oh, well, you know, they want to give Fukunaga all the credit. But his script had different characters, characters combined. And it wasn't following the book, which was fine. I mean, it's a whole new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Muschietti's get credit for bringing like the main guys from the book. And that might have been how he got the job, of saying he wants to revere the book. Because you kind of have to have those guys, the losers, be archetypes, you know?
Yeah.
There's a little bit, the more I go through it, I'm like, okay, they kind of did the book. And I'm not trying to compare the 90s, but the miniseries, Mike Hanlon is your main character, I think, in the miniseries, the librarian. Here, he knows the whole story. He does the research.
Yeah.
Here, they gave a lot of that stuff to Ben as a new kid. And they have Mike be like a homeschooled kid. Same backstory. And I'm always thinking like they kind of did him dirty a little bit, Mike, in this version. But I mean, it's like it's one way of doing it. Let's just make it a little bit different. But the kid we haven't talked about, the guy that played Ben, was so good.
Yeah,
and so is the guy that played Mike in this one and then the next one. You feel so for him. You feel for him as being like the outsider among the outsiders, right?
Yeah, I was about to say that they do kind of snub him in this one, but they kind of make up for it in the second one.
In the next one, yeah. So it's almost like they're building up towards that one because he gets to be like a main guy.
Mm-hmm.
I come back to the cast. I've never seen a movie cast like this where the only thing bad I can say is that they're so good in it, they're going to have to deal with being typecast for a long time after this, right? I haven't seen Skarsgård, to me. He's done great things, but it's like under, 10 pounds of makeup. I love Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen The Crow yet. No one has.
I completely forgot that came out.
I wanted to see it just out of curiosity, and I've never. It's like on Prime.
I was into it until I found out that like the original guy wasn't into it, and then I was like, oh, that kind of leaves a bad taste.
Yeah, and the director too, Alex. Yeah, he wasn't a fan of it. The guy I was so bad for, I got his name over here. Is the Jack? Not Jack. It was the Henry Bowers.
Oh yeah.
Because I hate that prick. Right. I mean, I hate him in the original. The book's got so much more reason I hate him because the book has got. He's such a fleshed out bully that I've never met a bully like that in my life. Thank goodness.
Yeah, no, it's terrifying.
But the Henry Bowers in this one, he's just there's stuff with Hochstetter we're not going to go into right now in the book. I'm like, they're going to do this, but the kid playing Henry Bowers, I hate him so much that I realize I've seen him other places and he's really good. But I'm always going to hate that guy.
I remember seeing an interview with the actor and I'm being like, what a sweet guy! Like he just seems like such a sweetheart.
Watch Captain Fantastic. Viggo Mortensen movie, and he's younger.
Yeah,
I see him. I was looking up a mirror before I got started. I'm going, oh yeah, he's this and this and this. And and he's like sitting there smiling. He's like next to someone that's in a dramatic, like romantic scene. I'm going, prick, just a prick. He's so good in this one.
Yeah.
And then the one I've noticed this last time, Georgie, got him right here, Jackson Robert Scott, who I've probably seen him more than anyone else in this thing because we watched. Joe Hill's Lock and Key on Netflix, and he's like the kid. He has to go through all this kind of stuff. He carries a lot of it. Would have loved to have seen him in a remake of The Shining, forever ago. Oh, wow. He is so good in this.
Yeah,
it's just a kid that you feel so bad for, especially in chapter two coming up, when you're like, oh, I feel so bad for this, this kid. But he's everyone's so good in this. I mean, it's just one of those things where. Again, hot take: this movie that made $1 billion, really good in it. The only thing that I. Probably keeps me from watching it on a loop, and it's not fair. It's not a down thing. It's a very effective thing. Mm-hmm. Is the scenes with Bev and her father are so painfully done as they should be. It's absolutely not fun, and I'm not saying avoid it because it's triggering.
Yeah,
but it's like, and it needs to be there. Without those scenes, the her being sexualized, her being like a main character where she has to overcome all this stuff, and her being the ballsy chick in the group, mm-hmm. doesn't work as much if she doesn't have that backstory.
Yep.
Her going around then digging, oh, she's just teasing him. No, she's just reclaiming her power, mm-hmm. with everyone, and she's not damaged by her father. But those scenes are so hard to watch because you love Bev in this. You absolutely are like your team Bev.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she's, spoiler, in the deadlights towards the end, you're like going, that's just not fair. Everyone go get her, right? And it's just like, and then you feel bad for Ben because he's in love with her so much. And I'm like, maybe she needs some time. Just give her some time, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I would never take that out, but that does probably keep me from watching it over and over again.
Yeah, it is hard to watch, especially that I think there's three scenes with the two of them, and the third one in particular where it kind of comes to a crescendo. And I remember this time around talking to Becky about it and just being like, I'm glad they went for it. But yeah, it's not fun to watch. It's like the movie kind of comes to a halt in those moments where it's just like, all right, here we go. Got to get through this now. Still not nearly as bad as it is in the book.
Yeah.
I don't know if depict that some of that stuff in the book, but I agree. That is like the one, and again, not even a negative point towards the movie, but just like the one thing that really stops it from just being like a joyride the whole time.
Like a terrifier fun romp bloody thing.
Yeah,
it makes the characters even more real, and it makes them, and it just makes you hate, you know. And again, I mean, you never hate Tim Curry's performance. He's the bad guy, and it's a fun movie. And this thing, I think, because it seems like that, with the way Bev is treated, with the way Georgie is, after the repercussions of that, it does make you hate the monster in the movie, which is, you don't get very often. I mean, a lot of times, even like an Art the Clown, or as my wife points out, Art the Mime. So she hates that guy. But I do like the read his Twitter feed, the actor.
Oh yeah.
You'll like him.
Okay.
Yeah. He's on the right side of history. That killer clown.
Oh, that's good.
But it's like, it's not a Freddy. He's not a killer clown from outer space. It's, you do justifiably hate this guy. And that's a ballsy thing, because the movie could have just been, if we just cut out that stuff, make him the bad guy, we can make it a fun romp, do it PG-13. Mm-hmm. And what would have made it at PG-13? How much would have made? I mean, $1 billion I bet you a third of the people that saw it didn't pay for it. A third of them probably paid for whatever is the theater next door. They're watching, you know, Iron Man or something. I don't even remember. It wasn't that 10 years ago, but they probably paid for that, snuck into it, you know?
Yep.
And that's what happens at R-rated horror movies. It's the audience being like, you know, 15 can't pay for it. 13. They pay for Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
And they go next door. It's just such a, it probably shouldn't exist. And nowadays it would. Now, post this, post Walking Dead, if you can change history, it would probably be bloodier, you know? I mean, it's just one of those, as I repeat the title over and over again, it's like a mantra. I'm so glad you picked this out, because I probably wouldn't have watched it again trying to remember how it was the first time. I would, because I think we just watched this like a year ago. And we got through the first one, loved it, and got to the half of the second one and got called away. Like we're too far into it. Like right up to the last 15, 20 minutes. So you stop and you go, well, now the momentum's ruined, you know, edging, it's ruined. So we never went back to it to finish the last 20 minutes after a week. And so we watched it again this time thinking, I just watched this again. We should, just to make sure we're fresh for the talk.
Yeah.
Just when I was watching it, focused on it, digging it. Commercial breaks, my wife and I discuss certain things, like she's just discussing the Elm Street 5 poster in the background.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and how in this one could have they had Freddy, as she pointed out, it's New Line Cinema that Warner Brothers that made this it. New Line, of course, is famous for Freddy. Could have they had Freddy in it to replace the Wolfman from the book, the Michael Landon Wolfman movie, you know? And I'm just like, oh, is there a scene that Robert Englund comes back back in and just has, like, in the basement of the, is it in the basement? Do you have Finn Wolfhard and Robert Englund in the basement of the school? And I'm like, I know it's not here. I've seen it before, but that would just be, go make that.
Yeah. I'm watching that movie in my head right now.
Oh, you know, yeah. I'm just like, cause that's kind of what, you know, kind of what it was, you know?
That would be perfect. What a perfect tie-in. That would have been...
Well, yeah, but they have the poster there. It's almost like the poster is there to acknowledge what year it was. It was 89, so you've got Batman, you've got Lethal Weapon 2.
Yep.
Like Last Crusade. I mean, the movies that are there that they can't show. But just how cool would it have been to just... I mean, Elm Street 5 might have... It's weird because it's almost like a precursor. It's ahead of the game when Tarantino recently came out and said that it was a ripoff of Freddy. And then everyone kind of goes... He was writing the book before Freddy came out.
Yeah.
But okay. Enjoy your cocaine. Thing.
Sometimes he having hot takes, I think.
I think he just stream of conscious talks, and then someone next to him kind of goes, you know, Matthew Lillard is actually a pretty good actor. You ever seen
Don't even Punk? Started SLC on his... Punk?
That whole talk. I'm like, dude, are you just
SLC? Get... You just reference SLC Punk? That's crazy.
Well, yeah, Matthew Lillard. I love Lillard, that yeah. movie. Matthew Lillard forever gets a free pass. I don't care how many Wing Commanders he makes or how many baseball movies with Freddie Prinze Jr., yeah. SLC Punk, Scooby-Doo, of course, and then 13 Ghosts.
Yeah.
Oh, and then for that matter, Life of Chuck. But I mean, anything he does, he gets a free pass for life.
You forgot to mention Five Nights at Freddy's.
I have not seen those yet, and I know that would be stealing it from people that earn the right to brag that one up.
I don't know if he's in the second one or not. I haven't seen the second one, but he's great in the first.
I won't even mention Scream yet.
Oh, of course. Scream, I mean, yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's just his name, Matthew Scream Lillard.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. But yeah, it was. Just the whole thing. I mean, you can go back there and watch. And it's just so. I don't remember ever being this time when they had the big fight, and then they all go their separate ways and they're angry, and then you know they're all not talking. I remember thinking, just make up. Come on, movie's over like a half an hour. I don't need to have you guys fighting. I need to have you guys. These are my childhood memories, even though
right,
I was like 40 when this thing came out. You need to get along, you know. And even then, I knew they do because that's how I've seen it before. Mm-hmm. I know they get back together because the final scene. But I'm still sitting there watching Finn Wolfhard pouting, playing the video games, you know.
Yeah.
At the arcade, yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing I think left kind of a weird taste in a lot of people's mouths. The whole. I think it left a lot of a weird taste in a lot of people's mouths when they do that little breakup, and then Beverly gets kidnapped, and then the boys have to go save her and everything. But I think that, and this is for a discussion a couple weeks from now, but I like that I feel like they redeemed that in the Welcome to Derry.
Yeah, I think so too.
They kind of do like a reverse on that, which is really cool. This time around, I don't know. It didn't bother me too much. I think it is probably like a little bit. It's like the only part that feels like it was added in the movie because like that's something that has to happen in movies. Like the group has to.
It's like a pacing. It's like a pacing thing. I think if I remember right, and you read the book more recently than I have, but like the pacing of it, the ball analysis of the film, they have to have that you know, Spider-Man loses his powers for a minute. You have to have the defeat, the Rocky comeback. I think in the novel, the fall from grace when the friends break up happens in the present. With like post, it's somewhere around, because again the young story and the modern the present day story are happened in the book at the same time.
Right.
I think it's like post Chinese restaurant, after they've lost a character. I'm not going to say who. I think the breakup happens in the present, so they had to kind of replicate that. Something has to happen there because then it's just a straight line. There's nothing to overcome.
You're right.
So I bet you they had to find something to have that beat in there. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and as far as what I'm saying, like the done dirty, I bet you there's stuff in the script that got cut because it's a 2-hour 15 movie,
right?
And he said he's got it was 3.5 hours original cut. I bet there's stuff in there because like Stanley gets kind of shortchanged a little bit, but he's in the book he's kind of shortchanged too. But I bet you that there's more with Mike, and I bet you there's probably more with we never do see. I don't think the book even has a whole lot of Richie. I don't think, but we and there's probably more of the family there. They probably shot. And they probably realized let's get rid of this stuff. So please give us my 16-hour cut.
Right. Yeah. I will eat whatever they put on the table as long as it's got the label on it. Like yeah. I'm just. I want more. I want everything. But you're right. I think. Spoiler. Can we get into spoilers for?
Yeah, we're halfway through. We can do spoilers now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is more of a okay. This is I'm gonna do a double spoiler warning because this is a spoiler for the second movie a little bit. But in the book, it makes sense why Stan kind of doesn't have a whole lot going on because we don't get his present day.
We never get it from him. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And this like it does feel a little bit like oh they could have done more with him. I his little scene with the painting woman, though very well done. I think it's a great scene. I love the him putting the painting back up and the woman's gone. Like that's
such a great The Conjuring tries to be that scene.
But it does. It just feels very random. It's just kind of like, oh, he's afraid of this painting in this room. It gets brought up never. Like really.
It's completely done for this. And we can talk about it since we're doing spoilers. The whole book is set in the present day, whatever present day is going to be, and all the kids stuff is flashbacks. So when Mike calls everyone to come back to Derry because it came back in the book, you don't know why he's calling you. There's been like a murder. It's the bridge. It's the kid on the bridge at the beginning, which here is in part two. So when everyone gets called, I think he calls Stanley first, if I remember right. And then we go through, he calls Bill, he calls everyone else, and we introduce every character about through the, it's about kind of halfway through the book. It's the full first episode of the miniseries. We call them all, and then we get a flashback of, the, of their story a little bit as they're coming back and they're talking. Stanley's reaction to the phone call is, in the book, it's, it happens here, is he commits suicide. We're spoiled, so it makes sense in now for the movies they separated it all out for, you know, whatever reason, and have all the kids' stories first, and then the sequel is going to be the adult instead of being shuffled together as a flashback. They removed it. Just makes it a linear story, one and two. So you have, like you said, of course there's no Stanley. It just makes sense there's no Stanley in the for the most of part one, because his whole story is a flashback. It's hard to have a flashback when you're dead in the tub. I tried it. Not fun. So it's all the stuff with the lady is there. Like his big brush with Pennywise on the back of Bill's bike is from someone else's point of view, because he's not there to tell the story. So you probably could have done more with Stanley, but everyone, but that's another thing is because when you're reading the book, when you're watching, when you're a fan of it, you're watching the movie, you know that Stanley is very sad because the last shot of Stanley, in one and beginning of two is you're sad. It's shot in such a smart way of here's Stanley. He's mad. He got bit. He's hurt. And he's angry. And then he kind of smiles at you like, I'm okay. And everyone kind of loves him because he forgives them. If you're just watching part one for the, well, that's your only thing you're done. It's great. Cause it's awesome. You love it. He's a good guy and you love him. If you're like, you know, a constant reader, you're like, oh, that hurts.
Yeah.
Because you know somewhere in his head he's lying to his friends because he's damaged. He's just not good, you know.
Like, I'm just not going to deal with this, and then I'll eventually forget about it, and everything will be fine.
I'll leave town, and then he's going to be happy. Oh, phone call.
And that, again, this is more discussion for next week, but that is like the way they handle his suicide is probably my biggest gripe with the second movie. Because of the reveal at the end, we'll get into it.
That's a questionable thing. I always fall for it. That's next week, but I fall for it, and then I think about it after going, oh, that doesn't work.
Yeah,
but I like the moment, you know. But yeah, we'll discuss that. That's like a big thing to discuss next week. Do you, dear sir, think that? And I always call it chapter one, even though it's just, I mean, it is at the end. I love at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for a title. It comes up on the screen, it, and then it goes chapter one, bitches. Like it's letting you know, if you like this, you know, and subscribe.
It's the equivalent of the end with a question mark.
Yeah. But it's also, it's just nice that we, I'm assuming, and I don't have any proof of this, they put the title out with it and it tested real well and everyone loved it, put more money in promotion, and they go, hey, can we add chapter one at the end? Because people are going to like that shit.
Yeah.
Because they're going to wait for, you know, a Marvel scene at the end. But the chapter one had to have been a discussion. It goes, well, we have to make sure it's going to, you know, characters cost money.
Yeah.
Do you think, now when you saw this the first, you already, you know, seen Tim Curry. Mm-hmm. You read the book before watching chapter one? No, okay, but you still know the story.
Yeah.
How do you think, if you were fresh-eyed to chapter one, how would it play for you?
Like today, if I
watched, if you never knew what was happening at the end, if you didn't know Stanley, if it was just a film, completely virginalized.
Oh man, I don't know. I think I would probably, I would definitely have loved it still. I probably would have felt a little dissatisfied with the ending if I didn't know that it wasn't going to be a complete story.
Yeah.
Because I don't like when movies do that. I feel like this movie gets away with it because everyone going into it pretty much knows, like, oh, this is not the whole story.
It kind of plays like a part two, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It plays like Empire Strikes Back or something like that, where you have a little victory.
Yeah.
You know there's another battle coming up. There's more they have to get. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, I do think I'd like it a lot. I think I would kind of... I don't know, because so much of my enjoyment also does come from the knowledge of the book now, and back then, the nostalgia of the miniseries and stuff. We briefly mentioned Patrick, how his character is a lot toned way down, I would say.
Here he's one of Bowers' gangs. And Here he's one of Bowers' gang members. Why is my computer? Can you still hear me?
I hear you. Yeah. Okay. I can see in your glasses, your screen's fucking with you.
It's just, there we go. Let's put this back to where it was. Yeah. Motherfucker.
Technical difficulties. Okay.
I don't know what it is. It's just as long as it's recording, as long as it's sending to you.
Yeah. I still see
it. Okay. Still okay, there we go. Yep. There's your screen,
still groovy.
Nothing can be easy. Anyway, I'm gonna just try and make this make more sense.
You were saying Patrick was a gang member.
He's one of the gang members, not gang, but it's Bowers' buddies.
Fair, yeah.
And then in the book he's just like another guy, but he's like the guy in town that no one wants to talk about.
Yeah,
it's like the another dirty dairy secret. I'm gonna try and fix this one more time. There we go. Nope, doesn't like me anymore.
Man.
Okay, let's try. Mother. Okay, no, it's toxic. Don't make it bad mouth. But yeah, he's almost like in a real town. He'd be the guy you're always nice to, but you're kind of afraid he's gonna kill your chickens.
Right.
Or he's a kid on the bus you don't sit by, not because you're being a bully, just because you're kind of afraid of what he's gonna say or do or touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
And here he's just one more guy in the group. He's sort of like an inciting factor. He's like he gets disappeared pretty quick.
Yeah.
Compared to everybody else. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I like I feel like it's like the only slight nod to him being a bit of a freak is our introduction to him. If you watch him, he's staring at Richie as like the gang is walking by, and he stares at Richie and then he licks his lips in like a really upsetting way.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. It's like obviously going into it the first time, I didn't really know anything about, going into it the first time, I couldn't have like, differentiated the bullies from the miniseries. No, I don't think they are very, they're all just kind of greasers and jackets. Like they all kind of
Stephen King greasers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, Belch because he belches, but
that's him. Oh, I didn't put right. That's why they call him that. I think Hockstetter in the miniseries just shows up for by credits at the rock fight, the great rock fight.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys, but I think he's anywhere in there mentioned by name.
Yeah, I think there's like some nameless bullies too, isn't there?
The more guys show up, just so it's not just three guys versus seven.
Yeah, which this movie didn't care.
Yeah,
3v7. Let's do it. I love that scene so much. It's so
both of them. Yeah,
yeah. It's another moment where it's just like this movie is totally okay with being silly. I'm hoping so bad I remember to talk about this when we get to Welcome to Derry. But there's a scene in the graveyard that is just so silly in Welcome to Derry. There's not the scene itself, but there's just one shot that's very silly, we'll get into it when
write down, put a note in the wall.
Yeah. But yeah, I love that this franchise will just get so silly sometimes, and sometimes it goes a little too far. I think in the second movie with the just call me Angel, when
I see, and every time that comes up, I'm always like, right before I saw, I must have seen it a bunch of times. Right before it comes on, I think, "Oh, what song do they do again?" And then it does it, and I'm like, "I love that." And there's no reason. It's not diegetic versus non-diegetic. It's not like it's like not a callback.
It's like the editor made a joke, and then they were like, "Just keep it in."
We're keeping that. He's like, "No, I was keeping that in." It's almost like it was like on a layer. It was something else. Project he was working on. It comes through, but it's so in there. Like that had to cost money,
right?
You know, those aren't free to put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. It's one of those things where it's clearly a love letter. They're doing it. They wanted it there, and he stood by it. And he had to get notes going. What's that for? And then he goes, "Oh, that's Eddie's mom's song or something. You know, he made up some kind of crap. Okay. Or no one was watching the kids play that day.
Or they just saw the income of the first movie and they're like, yes, sir, whatever. Yes, sir. You got it.
He's like, okay, everything else. If you don't put me that, don't call me Angel, I'm walking. And they're like, yeah. We've already pre-sold in China. We have all the money we need right now. What is your favorite moment in this?
Oh, man. Actually, I remember. Yeah, no, I remember a couple times I said while watching this movie the other night, I said out loud, this is my favorite part of the movie, like, multiple times.
Yeah.
So I would say with this movie standalone by itself, my favorite moment would probably be the projector scene. I think that it's just so it's such a good callback to the original. With the them going through the photo album, like the
and the book, yeah,
it's like the 80s version of that. I think the buildup is so good. I love that this is Richie's first exposure to anything supernatural, and he really sells it in that moment. He's like, "What is that?" It's so funny.
Well, that's what I love is the kid's reaction is so real, as like just bewilderment. It's like, yeah,
It would be he could have pointed and screamed, "Oh my god!" A scary clown. But in reality, if you're in that situation, you're not. There's not words coming. You're just like, what?
Like, I know how slide projectors work. I know what's going on. This does not, there's not that. Yeah. Just the flummox.
Yeah. So that's probably my favorite moment. Although my favorite joke with context of the entire franchise is when they have the three doors and it's like scary, very scary, not very scary.
Not scary at all. Yeah.
Yeah. And they open the one and it's, Betty Ripson's like top half, and he like slams the door and he yells, "Where are her legs?" And then in the second movie, they answer that question.
Yeah, answer the question. Yeah, I'm surprised they had to call back to the three doors. I mean, I thought that was a nice thing. You know, it's like they have ownership of that.
Yeah.
My favorites. Thanks for asking. My favorites are, I think they released the Georgie scene at the beginning. They're online as a preview. I think it was a preview in the theater, but I think they'd seen that scene. And they cut it before. What's that?
I was going to say, it was at least like, not the whole scene, but a pretty good chunk of it was the
trailer. A good chunk of it, but they cut away. Yes, yeah, probably for the trailer, I'm thinking of. They cut away before they have, it gets too bad. I know they cut away before the arm comes off. Cause I remember being like, oh, they took his arm off.
Yeah.
And then when his hand comes out of the grate, and it's just like, it's not inhumanly long yet. It's just like, it goes up to his elbow and it's like, but it's not stopping. And they cut it away to where it would be a shoulder, a normal person. And but you still in your head, you see this like a snake, like Freddy, all the way out. And I just, then of course the little kid in me, my favorite scene this last time where I'm like cheering it on, tear in the eye, is when it's when Richie at the end is saying, "You made me come down." Like he's going to walk away. Cause it was kind of manufactured, like, okay, Bill's going to be the hero and be the martyr and say, I'll leave, get out of here, save yourselves. It's my fault. We're all here. That kind of thing. Which is an invention. It's nothing wrong with that. And then it's they're all thinking about, do we leave? We're all terrified. And then here comes Richie, Mushmouth, who's going to like, he's been trying to leave the entire movie. Not as bad as Eddie, not as bad as Stanley, but he's the one, he's going to finally come up and say, okay, we're leaving. You brought me in the sewer. This is a bunch of garbage. And he picks up the bat. And now I got to kill this fucking clown. And I'm just like going, and I know that's a quote, that's a soundbite. It should be my ringtone. And when he does it, I'm sitting there and I got the skin crawls and I'm just like, yeah, kill it, And it's probably why Stranger Things kind of lost the fun of it, because Wolfhard has never beaten that scene. He's been very good in a lot of things,
Sure.
But it's that scene, it's that emotion where he knows, like, behind those thick ass glasses, he knows he's going to die right now. He knows. And I don't think it was even in the subtext as far as his relationship with Eddie from the second movie yet, but it's just, I have to like, oh, the weight of the world's on me. I always got to clean up your mess and I got to kill this fuck. And he's mad. He's mad at obviously Pennywise. He's mad at Bill for bringing him down here. he's mad at himself because now he can't back down. And all the things that, like, all his emotions are coming up, and like right there, bam, he's grown pubes. He's now an adult. He's gonna, you know, it's just the scene that I absolutely like. You know, it's like when you watch Rocky, you wish you had the strength to finish the fight. Yeah. Like, if I had a moment like Richie Tozer, that moment in my life would be so different right now. If I had actually just stood up or something, you know, yeah. I had like a Pennywise to fight. Yeah,
exactly. That scene hits real hard for me too, because I'm someone who, this is not something a lot of people know, but I used to have kind of anger issues growing up and stuff that I had to work through. So anytime the anger is like wielded as a weapon in movies, it always hits really good for me because it's like, oh, using that anger is like a positive thing. And in that moment, it really feels like he's just like, I'm scared shitless. I can either like die here in fear, or like, I'm just going to muster all of the anger I have inside of me, and I'm going to kill this fucking clown.
And that's exactly, it's we got to kill it. It's like, now I got to mow the lawn and I got to kill this. But it's like, it's a list of things they made him do. And I just love that so much.
Building up to this moment, and now I'm ready to just, all right, time to get to work. Yeah. And I love that. I love it. That also, another favorite moment of mine right before that scene is him, Bill Skarsgård. And this also, Bill Skarsgård, Pennywise, this also plays into what you're saying, like the Pennywise, is, you don't really root for him because he is such a bastard. And this is the scene where it kind of, where he is pretending to be Georgie and Bill has the gun, and he's just like, I don't want to go home. And it's like so awful. Like, what a terrible being this Pennywise is to put Bill through this. And then Bill shoots him, and it's done so well because it lingers on this dead Georgie shot,
which shouldn't be in a movie, which is, right? You know, I mean, studio thinking, you can't shoot a kid in the head.
Yeah. And it lingers on it just long enough for you to almost believe it's actually Georgie, but not long enough for you to think about it and realize that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, that's why.
But my wife pointed this one out again. She should be on the show. It's smarter than me. Cause we haven't seen, there's a bunch of kids floating next door.
Yeah.
Bev is floating next door. There's no reason. Like you said, it doesn't make sense. Because they never found Georgie. They're down there in the sewers looking for Georgie, not trying to find it. They're trying to find Georgie like he's still alive.
Right.
Bill had the whole tube of the giant toilet where he could pop out and be in the Barrens, be alive. So he might have thought that was actually him. If something happens, like almost in a Western, it would have been like, it would have shown something on him, like he would have had the boat, and Bill has the boat or something like that. But then he would see something in reflection, or like a little bit of sweat. He'd realize it. My wife pointed out the music gives away that it's not Georgie, because it's still some music. If they had just gone dead quiet and watched the kid laying there, you'd be like, oh, he just shot Georgie.
Yeah.
Like, you would, but again, the audience knows it's not Georgie because the arm's there. So if, like, it's one of those things where, like, we know it's not Georgie. He has an arm. If they had hidden the arm,
both arms in that?
For some reason, I thought he had his arm there because, like, his arm's missing.
I don't remember.
But maybe I'm just assuming I saw it there. Maybe it was kind of hidden and down. But, like, you know, if his arm's missing, you know he's dead. But, like, the music kind of tells you it's that he's dead. He's a monster. And then, of course, when it starts, I love the sound effects of when the arm's getting longer. And, you know, that's it's like, oh, it's like bone breaking. But if it had just done, if it had just gone dead quiet, and if you hadn't shown the arm missing, you know, in the first 5 minutes of the movie, you could actually think, oh, you just killed George. Like, all this is for nothing. You just put a bolt in his head. But then, of course, the line about that's coming later on, the little bolt gun. It's a great scene too. But the little kid, you know, yeah. Georgie, he has to play both little dumb kid, and he's excited and scared, afraid of the basement. He has to play excited in the alley. He has to be, oh, hey, we're friends now, giggle, giggle. And then he has to be absolutely terrified, ripped into pieces.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he has to come back and be able to play it convincingly. I'm sad, lost Georgie, but also has to be able to play it. He's also the monster underneath it, because you see him playing both.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that kid is he's essentially, I think, only in three scenes, but like every single time, the him talking to Pennywise in the sewers is fantastic. He is a child, like being lured in by this creepy clown. He's the way that he's like apprehensive about it, but also like, you know, intrigued. And
no one will ever buy a yellow Rain Slicker again. Okay, after seeing he's ruined the market. And the thing is, why is movie so popular? It is that scene in the trailer, probably.
Yeah.
Because everyone's it's hitting the nostalgia button, it's hitting the people that are watching it, and they're completely, oh, hope that kid's okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
Read a book, folks. I'm sorry.
But yeah, then he shows up the second time the actor shows up as, or Georgie shows up as the puppet in the basement. With a you'll float too, and his face.
Oh, that's so, melts. Yeah.
Which that is another scene that that was in the trailer, the you'll float too, but they added his like face rotting in the movie that's not actually in the trailer, which was a really nice touch. And then, yeah, at the end there where he's like begging Billy to, begging Bill to take him back home and stuff. It's so heartbreaking, even though, you know, watching it, you know, like that's not what's actually happening here. But yeah, for a second, it's like, man, if you really put yourself in Bill's shoes, and it's such a cool, I like that there's not, him, there's no reason why Bill wouldn't believe, that this is a fake. I'm trying to figure out how to word this. Bill would believe that this was real Georgie. There's a reality where Bill could have fallen for this and mm-hmm. and it would have made total sense. And there's no moment where he's just like, wait a minute, you can't be Georgie, because, you know, like you said,
I saw you. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Like, it's literally him.
Georgie's left-handed. No, some crap like that. Well, he's left-handed
exactly.
Now.
But no, it's him. He's finally able to process and accept the fact that Georgie is dead. And and he's able to overcome that that feeling to such an extent that he's like, I know you're not Georgie, and I'm going to kill you right now. Like, it's just it's such a really, really well done moment. And then, yeah, like,
how dare you fucking try it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then and then the lingering on the shot and everything, and it's just so well done. I like when his little rain boots get the pom poms on them too. Yeah. When he's transforming. It's a nice little touch. But yeah, holy moly, what a movie. What a great movie. Yeah. It's just front to back. It's just, there's like 10,000 other little moments that we don't have time to talk about, but like deserve as much attention as everything else we've talked about.
Anyone we haven't celebrated? I'm like, oh man. I'm just going through. I mean, we didn't brag up enough for Skarsgård, because he really, that is a lot of work. And people are giving a crap about when it turns into CG. I'm like going, it's not a bad thing, you know, when it's a CG character. I mean, like how often is Spider-Man not Tom Holland? How often is, I mean, all the best scenes of any Batman movie, it's a stuntman in a suit. So it's no different than that, because it's not like we're asking Pennywise. He's turning he's transforming, or he's stretching, or the face is coming off, or he's doing the big dance. Mm. He's not an actual person. He is his own marionette. You know, yeah, he is his own puppet of whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
I do like how much this film has Pennywise be just one more persona, one more anglerfish bulb, you know, more bait, you know?
Yeah.
Pennywise is its favorite, avatar, favorite bait, his favorite lure.
Sure.
But they don't play it off like he's the only thing, you know?
Yeah. I think that's also a positive on his ability to portray this thing. Is it's like, yeah, okay, half the time it's not actually Bill Skarsgård, but it is all the same character. And when it is Bill Skarsgård, he is still that character. He's able to play this thing, and I think he fleshes him out every time he plays Pennywise. The character gets fleshed out even more by the end of Welcome to Derry. Like, I have a pretty clear picture of like the ego of Pennywise, and he's just a cocky son of a bitch. But even here early on, like him coming out of the refrigerator, and the way he carries himself, and like he's like laughing and making fun of Eddie, and he's just such a bastard. And it just feels like he really feels like a real entity that would exist to just fuck with children. And I think that Tim Curry also does, you know, good, but it's such a different beast, I guess. Pennywise in the 1990s feels more like a humanoid kind of creature, I think. Whereas this Pennywise, it just feels like there's no rules to his physical form at all. Like,
I think Tim Curry Pennywise is scary because clowns are scary. Mm-hmm. Like you're thinking, oh, he's a guy in a suit. Why is that guy wearing that costume? Is he going to come by and just like put me in the back of his van? You know. Yeah. Whereas the Skarsgård Pennywise is he's otherworldly. He's cosmic horror from the beginning of it.
Exactly.
Because no one dresses in Victorian clown costumes.
Yeah,
they do dress as the big pants that Tim Curry had. It's a very different performance. It's two clowns.
Yeah. Bill Skarsgård doesn't trigger the clown fear in me as much as it triggers like the fear of like what the hell am I looking at.
We discussed last time the fear of the face behind the makeup, like the angry face with the fake smile on, makes us feel uncomfortable because it's like when we see eyes in the woods that are, you know, are reptilian brain, go, oh, that's a threat, that's a tiger coming, that's a wildcat coming to get me.
Yeah,
the angry face behind the smiley face, he's hiding something, he's gonna come get me. Mm-hmm. Skarsgård doesn't trigger that, like you said, because he's not trying to, he is just trying to play I'm gonna scare the crap out of you because then you taste better.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep, I'm not gonna pretend to be a clown. Even though he does pretend to be a clown at times to lure in kids in the in the opposite way, which is interesting that he does that too. Like, but he's mostly just like, I'm going to do whatever the hell I can. It's like when a cat gets zoomies, you know, and it just like starts running around, and I think that's how he gets internally when he's like around scared children, where he's just like, oh, I'm just gonna be crazy. And I love
that one dance. Yeah
the dance is so good. I love what I remember it got memed on and got made fun of a lot when it first came out. It's like, oh, every jump scare he's just like throwing his arms around and running towards them, and that is still true up through Welcome to Derry. Like, that's kind of his MO in that as well. It's just to, like, become a scary thing and then run at you. But it works for me. I don't know. It's super effective.
But it's like a restart. I mean, I love Michael Myers. He walks slow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I love Freddy. He's going to change and pop up behind you and say a line. It's this thing. But if you just walked into the room and Pennywise is running at you, it wouldn't be scary.
Yeah,
but he's got to sit there and be very quiet, and then that whole catatonic stare he has.
Yes,
you know, and I love how Skarsgård has one eye; he can just kind of drift by itself.
Yep,
you know, the focus. And I love that. And then people go, "Oh, it's not effective. This is like, no." When they both go backwards and forwards, that's not him. That's tricked in. But they give him, because they give him credit for, like, you know, and when he makes his bottom jaw come off, that's not Skarsgård. Okay. You don't want him to be human. Yeah.
Something Becky pointed out. Just another little touch of how creepy Pennywise is in this franchise. In Welcome to Derry, there's a few times where he reveals the deadlights, and it's always very quick. It's just like, blah, here's the deadlights. In this movie, when he's fucking with Beverly, he like opens his mouth so slow, and it feels like it's so labored almost. Like, he's just like, and it is, and I love that, just the idea. I mean, at the time, maybe when they made this movie, like, I'm sure that's just how he opens his mouth, like, it just works that way. But now, with all that in retrospect, I like to just imagine he's just putting on a show still, because everything about him is performance, which is, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's kind of the whole point, is like, you know, seasoning the meat, getting him scared. Like, he's very theatrical. And I think Bill Skarsgård, I don't know what I knew about Bill Skarsgård prior to seeing this movie. I just
knew his dad and his brother. I didn't know anything else about him.
I knew the one, it was his brother who's in True Blood, I think.
Yeah.
I knew about him, but every role I've seen outside of this, Bill Skarsgård is generally like pretty reserved, it feels like.
Yeah.
So
even little stuff, like when he's in Deadpool 2.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just a quiet guy, and then he vomits up stuff. It's just
yeah. But in this, he's so theatrical and over the top, and it's kind of mind blowing that he's able to do that. That he has such range, but it's also like that they kind of. I would love to see his audition tape. I don't know if that's like publicly available or not.
That would be worth seeing. Yeah,
that would be really cool. Because we just watched a video on Nosferatu, and his performance in that is so good as well, but just could not be more different than than Pennywise.
As far as range goes, there's range of like a Brad Pitt, you know, pretty man who can do Meet Joe Black and then he does the fun stuff, or like a George Clooney who does, I mean, we're talking about, you know, face actors. Sure. But Skarsgård, his range is doing inhuman things, you know. Like De Niro can do so much, Pacino can do so much that they're revered for it. But Skarsgård has played Barbarian.
Yep.
Oh, he was great in Barbarian, and he knows, after being like just in limelight for a couple movies, he knows every scene of that, what you expect from him. You expect him to be Pennywise, and he's just like, no. I'm not. I'm just whatever his name was. But then Nosferatu is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the range to play two cartoons and have nothing matching. Even like Robert Englund mentioned, he had Freddie and he had like the Family Opera in the same mix. And I love Robert Englund. It's the same character. It's still it's Freddie in both. And it's just one of those kind of things. But yeah, Skarsgård, we actually, an hour and a half ago, I picked up the Blu-ray of Nosferatu. Oh. Hopefully we'll do it pretty soon, because I've never seen the extended cut.
Okay.
So I'm looking at it. I'm you know, at the checkout line, I have to get the key over to open the box up. And I'm like, I forgot that was Skarsgård. Like, in my head, I'm going over my notes for this discussion. I'm like, I forgot. So my research is buying another movie that he's in that I shouldn't be buying when it's streaming everywhere. God, he's so good in this, though. And he's one of those guys. I bet you half the success of the Dairy going through is because he signed on as a producer, as a way of getting money.
Mm.
I bet you him signing up to it is how the show got made, because HBO goes, we're not going to do it without him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've done it before. Give me more meat to it. Okay, now you happy? And not in a dicky way, but like in a, okay, now I'm happy. This gives me something to chew on. And then as the audience, we get to completely celebrate that, because now we're given this huge treat, because we have, you know, it's so good. It's just,
We have to.
And again, we're getting ahead of ourselves, because this is how we're talking about this later on. Say,
we'll have to finish this discussion on his performance in a couple weeks here, because his portrayal of Bob Gray as well is so different and elicits such, like, it makes you make assumptions about a character that you don't know anything about, and it's just like it feels to me like there's not a lot of actors that bring that kind of presence to every role they go to, where it's like I automatically make assumptions because I remember how you were to Eddie in the House of Evil Street. He's mind blowing. He's very talented, and I know we're not really saying anything new saying that, but it deserves to be said as often as
I'm possible. Saying that as a guy who was Team Curry all through the 2017 movie, and I had to eat some shit and say, no, I like this version too. You know, give me more. And I'm glad we have more. I mean, I want him back for, I want to have every scene. He is so much fun in this.
Yeah.
And it's like I said before, he's probably so much fun because there's so much pain in the movie. The character's going through so much that if he was just overbearingly Max Cady and Cape Fear, it probably wouldn't be fun to watch.
Yeah.
But because he is so much fun, and you're like, you just give him all the presents, all the accolades. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Even the bits in chapter two that don't work, you still love it because it's still so much fun, you know?
100%.
But again, that's next time.
Yeah. Speaking of next time.
There you go.
What a segue.
Very well. Like, I set that up. Yeah, it was written down.
No. So I think that kind of wraps up our discussion on it, chapter one. If you guys have anything you want to include and or talk about, any opinions you have, what's your favorite moment, favorite character, for instance, you can hit us up on all our socials, which are on the bottom of your screen there, TDMMVI pod, pretty much everywhere. Or if you want to email us directly, you can email us at TDMMVIpod@gmail.com. I think it would be cool if we if we got comments, we could read some at the end of the episode, maybe do like a little discussion. Let us know your opinions, and next week we're going to be talking about It Chapter 2, and I'm so excited. I haven't watched it yet. I have not watched this movie since it was in theaters. So
really?
I realized that while I was watching the first one. I was like, because the first time I had seen, I watched in theaters, and then we bought the DVD when it came out. We watched it probably four times in a year, and then it kind of became that movie that I would start all the time but not finish. Yeah. But yeah, the second one, and I liked the second one a lot, but I saw it in theaters and I was like, that was really good, and I never watched it again. I don't know why. So I'm excited to jump back into it. But yeah, is there anything else? I think that's pretty much it for now.
I think that's it, man. I look forward to next time.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Jesse Spitzer.
And I'm J.R. Lees.
And this is the Devil Made Me View It. Thanks for watching.
Thanks, guys.